Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Corporate Nerve Center Post-Decision Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 23, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Hertz Corporation versus Friend. In this case, the court considered the definition of a corporation's principal place of business for the purposes of determining diversity jurisdiction citizenship under 28 U.S.C. Section 1332. In a 9-0 decision delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held that a corporation's principal place of business is the place where a corporation's high-level officers direct, control, and coordinate the corporation's activities, i.e., its nerve center, which will typically be found at its corporate headquarters. To discuss the case, we have Vanderbilt University Law School Professor Brian T. Fitzpatrick. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Fitzpatrick.
Yesterday, the Supreme Court decided the case Hertz Corporation versus Friend. The case resolved a question that has divided lower courts for more than a generation. That question is as follows. When a corporation is involved in a lawsuit, of which state is the corporation a citizen for the purposes of federal diversity jurisdiction? This question has been a long time in the making. The very first diversity statute enacted by Congress in 1789 did not mention corporations specifically, and for the first several decades of the Republic, the Supreme Court did not consider corporate entities to be citizens at all for diversity purposes. That changed, however, in 1844 when the Supreme Court reversed course and held that corporate entities were indeed citizens for the purposes of federal diversity jurisdiction. As the original diversity statute did not specifically mention corporations, nor did it mention where corporations should be considered citizens, as such, after the switch in 1844, courts were left to their own devices in deciding where corporations should be considered citizens. From the very beginning, courts treated corporations as citizens only of the states in which they were incorporated. This led many commentators to worry that corporations could manipulate diversity jurisdiction by incorporating in states unrelated to their businesses for the purpose of gaining access to federal courthouses in states which were related to their businesses. This sort of manipulation clashed with the purpose of diversity jurisdiction, which is to usher into federal courts out-of-state parties who might be discriminated against in state court litigation with in-state parties. It was thought that corporations with an extensive presence in a state, despite formally incorporating elsewhere, did not implicate the concerns over discrimination. As such, many commentators thought that corporations should not thereby be able to use incorporation elsewhere to create diversity jurisdiction in federal courts in the states in which they conducted business. In response to these concerns, Congress finally revised the diversity statute in 1958. The revision codified the long practice of treating corporations as citizens of their state of incorporation, but it started a new practice as well. The revision said that corporations should be treated as citizens of the state of their incorporation, as well as the state of their, quote, principal place of business. Thus, corporations could be citizens of more than one state for the purposes of diversity jurisdiction. In the years since, it has not been easy for courts to discern where a corporation has its, quote, principal place of business. Lower courts have adopted a number of different tests. Some courts have used the so-called nerve center test, which assigns corporate citizenship to the place where the corporation's high-level officers are located, usually the corporation's headquarters. Other courts have used the so-called business activity test, which assigns corporate citizenship to the place where the corporation's actual business activities are predominantly located. Still other courts have combined the nerve center test with the business activity test into something that has been called the center of gravity test. The business activity and center of gravity tests usually come with a host of factors that courts must consider to determine corporate citizenship, factors such as the geographic location of facilities, sales, servicing centers, transactions, payrolls, and profits. Needless to say, different lower courts apply these different tests in many different ways. Such was the stage when the plaintiffs in this case, Melinda Friend and John New, filed their putative class action against the Hertz Corporation in 2007. They sued Hertz in California state court, alleging that Hertz had violated California wage and hour laws. Hertz removed the case to federal court on the ground that there was diversity of citizenship. Hertz argued that Friend and New were both California citizens, while it was a citizen of Delaware, where it was incorporated, and New Jersey, where its headquarters was located. The district court in the Northern District of California did not buy it and remanded the case to state court. The district court used a citizenship test that was something of a blend of the nerve center and business activity tests. The district court first examined whether Hertz conducted significantly more business activity in one state than any other. If so, then that was Hertz's principal place of business. If not, then Hertz's nerve center would be used as its principal place of business. The district court ultimately held that because Hertz did so much more business in California than any other state, its principal place of business was there and not at its headquarters in New Jersey. Hertz appealed the remand order. Because the case was a class action, it could do so, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed in an unpublished memorandum opinion. The Supreme Court granted Hertz's writ of certiorari and reversed the Ninth Circuit in a unanimous opinion written by Justice Breyer. The court held that a corporation's nerve center, not the place of its actual business activities, was its principal place of business for the purposes of diversity jurisdiction. The Supreme Court gave three reasons for adopting the nerve center test. The first was the statute's language, referring as it does to the, quote, state where a corporation has its principal place of business. The court thought this language fit more comfortably with the nerve center test than with the business activity test. The court thought that the language contemplated a place within a state rather than the state itself. The nerve center test, focusing as it does on a headquarters within a state, thereby fit more comfortably with the text than the business activity test, which focuses on the amount of business conducted on a statewide basis. The second reason the court gave for adopting the nerve center test was that that test was something of a bright line rule, whereas the business activity test was a multi-factor analysis. Citing the jurisprudence of Justice Scalia, the court noted that jurisdictional rules especially could benefit from bright lines, because without them, a great deal of time can be wasted litigating over matters collateral to the lawsuit. The court further noted that the greater predictability of bright-line rules should help corporations make investment and other business decisions relating to the location of their operations. Finally, the court noted, it said, for those who accept it, no doubt in a nod to Justices Scalia and Thomas, that the legislative history of the 1958 revision supported the nerve center test. The court noted that the original version of the revision, which was proposed by the Judicial Conference, made corporations citizens of states in which they earned more than half of their gross income. This version was dropped in favor of the eventual language making corporations citizens of the states of their principal place of business. The court thought that the gross income test was more akin to the business activity test, and in light of the fact that the gross income test was ultimately abandoned by Congress, so should the business activity test be abandoned by courts today. The court's decision in Hertz v. Friend is important because it resolves an issue of diversity jurisdiction that had bedeviled the lower courts for a generation. It will now be clear in most cases which states corporations are citizens of. This will reduce the amount of collateral litigation that takes place in federal court, and to the extent corporations have different expectations regarding their legal liabilities in federal court than they do in state court, it will permit corporations to better predict the magnitude of those liabilities. But the court's opinion is interesting for reasons beyond simply resolving the question of corporate citizenship for purposes of diversity. It is notable, for example, that the court based so much of its decision on the virtues of bright-line rules and the vices of multi-factor tests. This is surprising for a court that has not been reluctant in recent decades to tether itself to multi-factor tests in a variety of areas, including many areas, like this case, that deal with jurisdictional issues. The court's newfound appreciation for bright-line rules raises the question whether Justice Scalia's crusade against multi-factor tests is finally resonating with his colleagues. The decision in Hertz is also interesting because it is a gentle reminder, despite all of the hubbub over the Supreme Court's recent decision in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission that corporations have long been considered citizens for constitutional purposes. Much of the commentary regarding Citizens United has questioned the court's premise in that case that corporations should be protected by the First Amendment. But, as the court reminded us yesterday in Hertz, for nearly 200 years now, corporations have been considered citizens under the United States Constitution, at least for the purposes of Article 3 of that document.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.